We are in a new series that I started a couple of weeks ago called Greatest Hits, and I am pulling out of the vault some of my favorite, all-time personal favorite sermons that I have ever given from when I started giving sermons back in 2006. And this one, and I'm giving some commentary on these as well because I'm looking back at them and I'm seeing things in these sermons. I was like, whoa, I was onto something 8 years ago, or there was something in an earlier version of Dave that it's pretty good. That guy's all right. Yeah, he's building something there. So this one comes from a series called Will the Real King David Please Stand Up? Does anyone remember this series? Yes. Okay, now. I will be honest with you. This is probably my all-time favorite series that I have ever done. And when I knew I was going to do this series for the summer, Greatest Hits, I said I have to pull one from Will the Real King David Please Stand Up? Because here's one of the things that I noticed when I started giving this series. I was reading the stories of David. I was doing some studying into who David was. And what you realize is that the person of David, as presented in the Bible, he is filled with inconsistencies. There's moments when he is the most holy, pious, God-fearing person. And then there's moments when he is this bloodthirsty fiend. In the person of David, you have the best of humanity, you have the worst of humanity. So I titled this series, Will the Real King David Please Stand Up? Because in one moment, he's up here, and it seems like he's worshiping God with everything that he has, and then the next moment, he's over here turning his back on God, which it's kind of like our journey at times, right? There's some moments when we feel really close with God, and then there's other moments when we want nothing to do with God. And this is, it's almost what we see with King David. And so this series was fall 2018, so just about 5 years ago. It was a 5-week series about the complexities of being human, the contradictions that we carry within us. And we all, let's be honest, we all have these contradictions. You are this endless mystery. Have you ever tried to figure yourself out? So stop trying to figure other people out. If you can't even figure yourself out, I mean, why are you going to try to figure your neighbor or even your spouse? I mean, imagine viewing every single person as just this endless mystery. There's so much contained within you, within the person that you're sitting next to. It makes for fascinating conversations. That's why, for me, questions are everything, because it unlocks something new about yourself or about your friends, the people that you're in a relationship with. That's why this series, oh man, I wanted to preach every single one from this series. Maybe I'll just go back and do the whole series at some point. It's about the dark and the light that we carry within. And I remember thinking, after I did this 5-week series, I finished, and I thought to myself, we had community, I distinctly remember, the very vivid picture in my memory, we had a community group after I preached that last sermon, and I was sitting there in the back room of life, and I said, how will I ever preach a series as good as this one? I felt like I had hit the pinnacle of my preaching skills, and then it was just kind of all downhill from there. Now today, the sermon that I want to look at, it's about the light within. So we have the dark and the light. This series is about the light that we carry within us. And the main idea for this particular sermon is about discovering and living from our inner gold. That's my starting point. Within every single one of you is this gold, these riches that you carry within you. The whole idea of this series is, how do we tap into that? How do we discover it? How do we excavate the gold? And then how do we live from the riches that you all possess within you, the riches that are unique to you and how God has created you to be? Now, looking back on this sermon, I said I would do some commentary. I see how personal this sermon was for me. I don't know if I necessarily saw it at the time, but looking back on it 5 years later, it's as if I'm seeing things about myself, things that are just natural to me now, but in this sermon, I was discovering them. As I was putting this sermon together, I was discovering all these truths about myself, about the Bible, about life, and that's kind of how creativity works. I've been reading this book, The Creative Act by Rick Rubin, probably the best book that I've read of 2023. Could not put this one down. If you haven't read it, Amazon it right now. It's okay. Pick up your phones. Best book of the year so far. And we're about like 7 months into the year. So that's saying something. And here's what he says. The most truthful and irrational aspects of ourselves are often hidden, and our access to them lies through the creation of art. Creativity, putting together a sermon, because putting together a sermon is an act of creation. It's an act of creativity. So creativity is an exploratory process to find the concealed material within. I don't know what you create. I don't know what kind of art you do. We are all artists. You're creating your life with every step you take. Every single step, every decision you make is an act of art. How do we discover more about ourselves? How do we find out what it is that we are carrying within us? We create. We explore. We write. We have conversations with others. We journal. We paint. We write plays. We act. Whatever we happen to do. For me, sermons are, that's my expression of creativity. That is how we get to the gold within us. And this is how we read the Bible. We read the Bible through our own filter. We have a lens. We all do it, whether we are aware of it or not. Our experiences, they impact how it is that we understand and interpret Scripture. Our experiences, what we are going through, what we have gone through, shapes our understanding of who God is. This is why you can read a certain portion, a story in the Bible, and then 5 years later, you see these truths that you hadn't seen earlier because you have changed. I had a Substack article on this one. I called it, "The You of Today is Not the You of Tomorrow," because we're ever changing. And the person that you are today, well, you're not going to be the same person tomorrow or the next day. You're not the same person you were 5 years ago. We are an ever changing being. This is true for every single one of us. Every step you take is changing you into someone new and someone different. And this is why we read the Bible and we see things. We go a layer deeper. You can uncover more and more with every read through. I want to take a familiar story today, a story that we all, and I believe we all know this story, and I want to breathe some new life into it. And I realize that as I was reading the story 5 years ago, the story of David, and especially the story that we're going to look at today, it's as if this whole hidden layer of meaning started flashing right in front of me. So this sermon is very personal. This is the reason why I chose this one for us. Who has heard of the story of David and Goliath before? All right, a couple of us have heard of this one. The rest of you, follow along. You'll pick right up on it. This is in 1 Samuel 17. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war. Saul, who was the king of Israel, Saul and the Israelites, they assembled, they camped in the valley of Elah, and they drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill, the Israelites another, and there was a valley between them. So imagine right here I'm in a valley. On one hill you have the Philistines. On a hill over here you have the Israelites. And there was a champion who was named Goliath. And he was from Gath. Anyone have any friends from Gath? A couple friends from Gath? So you know about their champion, Goliath. And he came out of the Philistine camp. So imagine, you're the Israelites. Bible's written by the Israelites. So imagine, you're here on your hill. There's a valley. All of a sudden, this champion comes down from the hill, the opposing hill. And his height was 6 cubits and a span, which translates to 9 feet, 9 inches. Who has a friend 9 feet, 9 inches? Who has ever run into someone 9 feet, 9 inches? Who wants to run into someone 9 feet, 9 inches? No. He had a bronze helmet on his head. He wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels, which equals 125 pounds. You think you had a heavy coat. Imagine wearing a coat. And so you're here in this valley. Here come, everything is just jingling. There's bells. Things are clashing together. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point, just the point of this javelin, weighed 600 shekels or 15 pounds. Some of you can't even lift a 15-pound kettlebell. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood, and he shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul?" He's taunting them. "Why don't you come out? Face me. What's the matter with all of you? Why are you cowering over there on that hill? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, then you will become our subjects and serve us. And then this Philistine said, this day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Here's how the story of David and Goliath begins. There's this champion, he's taunting the Israelites, and we're told that Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Hebrew 101, this word dismayed is the Hebrew word kata. Say kata. It means to be shattered, broken, or dismayed. The story begins with despair. The spirits of the Israelites, they've been broken. They've been shattered, crushed. Hopelessness has set in. They're on their hill, cowering, afraid, powerless to stop the Philistines and this champion who keeps coming down. There's a sense of despair in the entire camp. And so the height of this champion is described as being 9 feet 9 inches. The average Israelite at the time, 5 feet 6 inches. You ever felt this way before? Where it feels like the obstacles that you're facing are too big for you? The obstacles in front of you are overwhelming. Hopelessness has set in. Despair has crept into your soul. It feels as if your spirit has been broken. That which is in front of you is too powerful. It's twice your size. It's too big. The relationship is just too far gone. The bills are piling up, and you're wondering, how will I ever be able to pay these? The sickness, it's just too powerful. The situation that you're facing, you look at it, it's like this giant right there in front of you, and the only thing that you can do, you can't move. You're in this catatonic state. You can't move because there's this sense of dread and helplessness within you. You ever been here before? Maybe you find yourself here this morning. Part of the human journey is that we all end up here at some point in life. We hit a wall. There's a mountain in front of us, and we wonder, how will I ever move beyond this? This is how the story of David and Goliath sets in, with despair. The entire camp being filled with despair. Now the story continues. They were dismayed, terrified. Enter David, our champion. The Philistines have their champion. Now we come upon the Israelite champion, David. David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. And Jesse had 8 sons. And in Saul's time, he was very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest. Now, and this is really important, this line right here. It's a throwaway line for many of us, but there is so much truth packed into this sentence. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. The Hebrew for this word, followed Saul, can also be translated as to walk with. The 3 oldest of Jesse's sons walked with Saul. And where was Saul leading them? Down the path of despair, inaction, and fear. You have the 3 oldest sons who followed Saul. They went with Saul. They walked with Saul. And then you had David, who walked his own path, who went back and forth. He didn't follow Saul into despair. probably about 15 years ago, I visited my grandmother for the week between Christmas and New Year's. There was an impending storm, snowstorm, that was supposed to hit on the day that I was going to fly back to New York. About 3 days before the storm, maybe even 4 days before the storm, the Weather Channel, what do you think they were doing? They were hyping this storm up. Storm of the century. Biggest snowstorm of the year. We're never going to see another storm like this one. What was my grandmother doing? She was glued to the screen. Oh, David, I don't know if you're going to make it home. I had nowhere to be. I didn't have to get back. If I was snowed in, if my flight didn't leave North Carolina, it didn't matter. But watching the Weather Channel produced so much anxiety within her. It's all she could talk about for those last 3 days of our trip. I don't know. They're just saying this storm, it's going to be pretty bad. I don't know if your flight's going to land. You may not make it out of here. All right, great. So we get to spend another day together? All right. Not a big deal. But yet this is what she was surrounding herself with. And it produced so much anxiety within her. Here's another truth that we find in this story of David and Goliath. The cultural spirit, the spirit of the surrounding culture is contagious. This is true about the things that you subject yourself to on TV, like the Weather Channel, the news that you follow, the people that you surround yourself with, the three oldest of Jesse's sons walked with Saul. They followed Saul into despair, anxiety, fear, inaction. David, he walked his own path. You become like who and what you surround yourself with. If you surround yourself with people, with ideas, organizations that are filled with fear, you will become filled with fear. Same with anxiety, with greed. On the other hand, if you surround yourself with people who are generous, chances are you will become a more generous person. If you surround yourself with people who are filled with love and with grace, people who do their best to live by forgiveness, chances are you will begin walking in that direction as well. That's why what we do here on a Sunday morning is so important. We are a community that desires to live out the words of Jesus, a community of love, of grace, a safe place for all people. And my belief is that if we can surround ourselves with people who are on that path, that maybe we'll all begin ever so slightly, because it's really difficult to walk that path when there's so many other forces out there that are shaping us in other ways. But if we can get here together and surround ourselves with people who are on this path, well, maybe we can become a bit more forgiving ourselves. Maybe we can become people who are more filled with grace for ourselves and for every person we come in contact with. You will become who and what you surround yourself with. David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep. He didn't simply follow where Saul was leading. So he didn't get caught up in the despair and the hopelessness because he walked his own path. Then the story continues. I'll just give you a bit of a summary. Chapter 17, verse 16, there's 40 days of taunting. So imagine, for 40 days, here you are, you're camped out. I don't know about you, but camping isn't my favorite thing to do. But if you add on top of camping, you add a giant that is taunting you for 40 days, that's a pretty rough 40 days. I think at the end of those 40 days, you would just kind of be beaten senseless. Nothing's going to bother you anymore because you have no more feeling left in you after camping out for 40 days and having this giant every day saying, come and fight me. Who's willing to come out here and fight me? Then you have an Uber Eats delivery where David goes. He does a pizza run for his brothers. He decides that he's going to leave his father's sheep because he's going to bring a meal to his brothers who are right there on the front lines. And every single time that Goliath comes down from the hill, every time he taunts, everyone from the Israelite camp looks up, sees the giant, and runs in hiding, runs in fear away from the giant. The story continues. The Israelites, they had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and here, will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." Who would like this? You're part of the royal family, and you don't have to pay taxes anymore. So you don't have to worry about filling out any of those tax forms at the end. Like, this is like, you would think someone would go running at the chance, but yet no one is taking Saul up on this offer. And then David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And everyone repeated to him what they had been saying, and they told him, "This is what will be done for the man who kills him." Notice, what are all the people saying? Whoever does this, this is what will be done for the person who kills Goliath. And it's a narrative that's on repeat. This has just been etched into their minds. If anyone asks, what's going to happen? Okay, here's what's going to happen for the person who kills Goliath. In other words, you know what they're saying? By saying whoever does this, they're saying, well, it's not me. Not me. Whoever does it, it's not going to be me, but whoever goes and does this, whichever brave Israelite comes forward and can defeat or fight Goliath, well, here's what the king will do for him. Basically, what everyone is saying is, well, I'm too small. I'm too slow. I'm too weak. I'm too fearful. I'm too, fill in the blank. What's the narrative that you have etched into your mind that prevents you from stepping out and risking? What's the narrative in your mind that keeps you glued to the hill, afraid to step down into the valley and meet that obstacle that you find right there in front of you? We all have this narrative. I'm too, you fill in your blank. I remember when I was going through this sermon, I came upon something known as, oh, well, we'll get there in a second. You didn't see that, did you? All right, Keaton saw it. Well, at least he's honest. It's something called the imposter syndrome. Have you ever heard of this before? This happened to me the first time that I ever gave a sermon. 2006, which I will give my first sermon ever in a coming up here very shortly, actually. And I actually have audio clips from it too, so maybe I'll play a few audio clips. You know what? My accent from 2006, I don't know where it's such a strong New York accent. I sound like a completely different person. I'll play a few audio clips for you. I remember I was standing up there, I was giving the sermon, and I look out, and it was on a raised stage where I was giving the sermon. There were people taking notes, and it was this weird out-of-body experience where I thought to myself, why are they taking notes about what I'm saying? I'm not at a coffee shop with people and people are like writing down notes from the conversation, yet all of a sudden, because I have a microphone, now people want to take notes about what I'm saying. Were you at that sermon? You guys might have been at that sermon in Hillside 2006. Yeah. I've known the Murgowskis for a long time. She's still taking notes. You might even have all the old notes in there. It was the oddest thing because, what's that? And they're still coming. All right, I'm doing all right. But it was this thought in my mind where, oh my goodness, who am I? Like, why are people taking notes? Like, why am I deserving of my words being written down? Like, what if people were to find out how messy my life is? What if people were to find out that I was a fraud? That I don't have everything all put together? It's known as the imposter syndrome, where you have this feeling that, well, if I were to step out and risk, well, then other people are going to find out that I really don't have what it takes. Or I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to slip up in some way, and I'm going to be exposed for the fraud that I am. And I think this often keeps us down. This often keeps us on the couch. Because they think, if I step out and risk, well, what if I take a misstep? Or what if I say something weird? Or what if I don't succeed the way in which I hope to succeed? Well, then what's everyone going to think of me? And this is why we have these narratives like, well, I'm not enough. Me, myself, I don't have what it takes. This is a job for someone else. I'm just me. And if I were to stand out, if I were to step out, well, then everyone would see that I'm really not a hero. I'm not a champion. I mean, this is what our culture does. And so we place all of our hopes and dreams on other heroes, on other people to step out and to fight Goliath, to fight the obstacles, to overcome the obstacles that we're facing individually, but also as a culture as well. And so we have our heroes like Thor. We pay lots and lots of money to sit in these seats and watch someone else fight the bad guys. A matador? How's that? He does look like he's got that red cape right there. Yeah. What about this guy? Who knows who this is? Can you see that? This is Tom Cruise doing what he does best, run. Yeah, Mission Impossible just came out. Here's another hero saving the world. Not me. Not me. These are the people who save the world. Not people like me. What about our music icons? These are our heroes. We pay lots and lots of money to listen to their music, to watch them perform live. We have our sports stars that we pay lots and lots of money to. These are the heroes, not me. I don't, like that. That's them up there. I can't do this. I'd be exposed as a fraud if I stepped out and risked and tried something. And so there exists this gap between us and then the heroes. The normal people like us, and then the heroes who get paid the big bucks, who fight the bad guys, who have the hammer, who wield the sword. This is what's happening in the story of David and Goliath. Normal people like you and me saying, uh-uh, I can't do this. Whoever goes and do it, like, we need a hero. We need someone like Thor to come and save the day. I love this by this quote by psychiatrist Robert Johnson. We are just as afraid of our nobility as our darkest sides. Yeah, our dark sides are pretty scary, but so is the greatness that we possess within. We are just as afraid of our greatness as the darkness within. I love that. Yeah, you got this inner gold. But sometimes you're afraid of what you possess. You're afraid of the riches within you. So we have the Israelites. They're stuck in despair, completely lacking imagination, having no faith in what they or God's power within them is capable of. But here's David. Now, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at David, and he asked, "Why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle." So his brother's angry at David. What's going on? Like, why are you here? Get away. You don't deserve to be here. "Now, what have I done?" said David. "Can't I even speak?" He then turned away, and I love that phrase. He turned away. Here's his critic. What are you doing? What are you doing? What does David do? He doesn't give him the time of day. He turns away. I can't have that bad energy. I can't deal with that. Let me go and talk with someone else. And he brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. "Whoever fights, blah, blah, blah." What David said was overheard, reported to Saul. Saul sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he's been a warrior from his youth. You don't have what it takes." See, sometimes we have these external messages. It's parents, siblings, friends, teachers, other people telling us you don't have what it takes. And the sad part is, we begin believing them. And so we stuff down that greatness. And so David said, "Yeah, I don't have what it takes." And then he turned and went home. Okay, that's not how the story goes. You all were tracking with me. No, no, that's not. Here's what David said to Saul. Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. Which that Saul's like, what do you mean, sheep? Goliath? I don't see the connection here, David. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair. Now that is a champion. You're going to go out and you're going to, next time you're at the Bronx Zoo, who's going to go and seize the lion by its hair? Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear, will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. Saul's like, all right, get him out of here. Whatever happens, I don't care about him anymore. Just go and see what you can do. Number one, David doesn't give in to the spirit of the culture. He doesn't give in to the despair. He doesn't give in to these defeating messages saying, you're not good enough. You don't have what it takes. He chose to walk his own path. Number two, he doesn't listen to the critics. He turned away to someone else. He listened to that true voice within him. That true self that he had with him. The voice of the Spirit saying, no, actually, you got this. You've been prepared for this. Every step has led you to this moment. Now, why were his brothers so angry? Because David got off the couch and he exposed their fear. He exposed their unbelief, their dissatisfaction with themselves. This will happen every single time you step out in risk. You will have the cynics. You will have the critics because your action is exposing their inaction. Your satisfaction for following your path, listening to the Spirit, will expose the dissatisfaction that others have with their lives because they haven't listened to that voice within. David did not listen to the critics. So the brothers aren't angry at David. They're angry with themselves. This always happens. They're angry with themselves for walking with Saul into fear and despair and inaction. They're angry with themselves for walking a path void of trust and joy and meaning and fulfillment. They're angry with themselves for stuffing down the Spirit-given greatness within. Story continues. Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these because I am not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in hand. He chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in hand, he approached the Philistine. I'm not used to these. I haven't tried them. I haven't put them to use. My experiences have prepared me in my own unique way. Stop trying to force your experiences on me. Let me do it my way. Let me do it the way in which God has prepared me to be and to act. Imagine showing up at a soccer match dressed in this. Landon, I know you play a lot of soccer. What if you showed up to a soccer match, or what if one of your friends showed up to a soccer match dressed in that? Can you see that? Not your jersey number. All right. Very perceptive. I like that. It's not you. Yeah, it's not your jersey number. You don't need a helmet. They wouldn't let you play with a helmet. You'd be like headbutting all the other soccer players. It's not going to happen. You've all been prepared in your own way for whatever obstacle you face right now. Wearing someone else's armor, wearing someone else's jersey with a different number, it's not you. It's not who God has created you to be. And it's not how you will overcome the obstacle in front of you. So let's tie this all together. Rhodes, heroes, critics, armor. First, Rhodes. The story begins by David choosing not to walk with everyone else. 2 questions for us. 1, are you blindly being led down a road? Are you being led down a road by others, by our culture? You're not even aware of the road that you're walking. Or are you actively choosing the road that you walk? two questions for us to ask this morning. This is how the story begins. This is what prepared David because he chose to walk his own path. What road are you walking this morning? Are you choosing, actively choosing who and what you surround yourself? Because this will shape your life. Heroes. Heroes should inspire you to action. They shouldn't cause you to sit in seats like this and watch them do everything. But heroes should actually inspire you to act and to be the hero in your own story. I mentioned the book, The Creative Act. Rick Rubin tells a great story about this. So the Beatles wrote this album, Rubber Soul. And the Beach Boys heard this and they said, oh my goodness, this is the best thing I've ever heard before. If I were to write an album, or if we were to write a song, I wish it could be as good as Rubber Soul. From that, they were inspired to write the song God Only Knows on their album Pet Sounds. Now, when the Beatles heard, especially Paul McCartney, heard the song God Only Knows, he said, you know what? That is the best song that I have ever heard. If we were to write an album, I wish it could be as good as Pet Sounds. I wish all the songs could be as good as God Only Knows. So as they were writing their album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Parade, what album do you think they listened to on repeat? Pet Sounds. The Beatles producer said, without Pet Sounds, Sgt. Pepper never would have happened. Pepper was an attempt to equal Pet Sounds. That's how it works. Your heroes inspire you to act. Your heroes inspire you to be better in your own craft. You don't sit there and just watch everyone else do all the action, but rather you become inspired to then act in your own way, in a way that is unique to you. Which brings us to critics. This is a picture of a crab bucket. If you've ever seen a crab bucket, there's always that crab that's trying to crawl out. And what are the other crabs trying to do? Pull the crab right back in. Here's one of the crabs at the bottom. Oh, no, you don't. Where do you think you're going? Come back down here where the rest of us belong. Yeah, you don't listen to those critics. You escape the crab bucket. You turn away. If there is a crab saying, hey, you belong down here with us on the couch, you just turn to someone else and you speak to someone else, someone who will listen, someone who will inspire you and encourage you to walk the path that you feel God is leading you down. And then armor. Every previous step and every misstep, this is important, everything has prepared you for this next step in front of you. And then this next step that you take, the very next step you take, it will prepare you for the next step, and then the next, and then the next. God uses all of you and all of your story to bring love, healing, salvation, and grace to this world. Roads, heroes, critics, armor. Still one of my all-time favorite sermons. It inspires me. I had forgotten how much it inspires me. My prayer for you is that you would walk your own unique individual path and turn away from all those critics and don't let them pull you back down into the crab bucket because you belong to greatness. That is what the Spirit has birthed within you. Don't be afraid of your nobility. Chase it. Embrace it, as David did. Maybe one day you will defeat your own Goliath as well. Even if the Goliath is 9 feet 9 inches or 10 feet 9 inches, you can do it.